Okay, so I'm going to just talk a little bit about unlearning meditation. It's the title of my previous book, 2010. When you meditate in this more open way and you have permission to do the practice you've been doing or not do it, you might see some things about your previous meditation practice. You might get a sense of some of the rules in that practice, or some of the effort in the practice, or some of the various ideas or concepts that go along with that practice. And what I'm actually getting at in this approach is not to immediately say, well, this practice is wrong or bad, or I should not do this and I should do this other practice, but actually to shift your orientation around practice and to see, well, maybe my previous practice had some certain elements to it that I wasn't aware of, which were a problem, which maybe were going in a direction that wasn't quite where I wanted to go. And this happened to me in my meditation practice, which is one reason I wrote about it. And in talking to students over the years, I've kept hearing, you know, about the benefits of doing various practices, but also some of the things that started to happen, and people felt that they couldn't really change their way of meditating. They felt they had to do it in the traditional way, which tends to be very rigid and perhaps unforgiving. So the notion around unlearning meditation is basically that you make your meditation practice or awareness of your meditation practice part of your practice, so that even learning this kind of meditation practice, you start to reflect on this as a practice. You don't just kind of do it in a compliant, you know, way of just, I'm going to follow this and just, you know, trust in what the teacher says and what I'm going to get out of it, but you keep some of your critical faculty and reflect on it and assess a bit and get a sense of, well, what is going on in this practice I've taken up? And it's hard to see when you're doing a practice fully. When you're right in a side of a meditation practice, it's kind of, you can't look around it so well. You're more concerned with doing the instructions correctly, having certain kinds of experiences or insights, rather than looking at the practice and how you're holding it, how you're trying to use it in a certain way, or how it's being presented to you, perhaps, in a way of being black and white. And that's what tends to happen with many practices. There's a right way, a wrong way. And so one thing that I also saw is that many people will feel as though when they're not getting the right results or they're having problems with the practice, that they're a failure, instead of looking at maybe the practice is failing them. Maybe there's a way in which, you know, nothing wrong with you meditating. There may be just a way in which an abstract practice, something that somebody has put together as a set of instructions and ideas on how to meditate, doesn't fit you. It just is not working at that moment. It may at some other point, you know, some other time down the road. I do feel that many traditional meditation practices might actually be better taught later on than at the beginning. And I get the criticism around this practice that it's probably better to be taught later on than at the beginning. But my feeling is that the orientation I'm presenting you around meditation may actually just be a kind of easy entryway into meditation practice and a way of meditating that will open up and allow you also to do other practices, that it's not about excluding other types of meditation. So I just wanted to bring that up with you, especially in case any of you wanted to talk about your meditation experience at all or had other questions. So we'll open it up for questions for another 20 minutes till lunch. Yes. Boy, I like the way you phrase the question. You know, it's something that I really don't like to go into so much because what I see is that people develop along their own lines and that it's really quite individual. I do say a few words about it at the end of my book on learning meditation, but I mean, one thing is that what you practice in meditation, in a sense, the kinds of instruction, the kind of practice you're doing, is going to have direct effects. So if you do a more focused practice on the breath and you're developing more concentration, you'll probably find that over time you may have more concentration and focus. That's happening on account of practicing that. So in this kind of practice, you might find, well, there's more ability to sit with and be with certain emotions and thoughts, to tolerate them longer, to perhaps develop greater acceptance of your experience, more kind of interest in your thoughts and feelings and in those of others, a kind of capacity to be willing to explore these things rather than just react to them. My experience has been teaching this within a, within Dharma communities, is that it also is a kind of practice that supports people studying and exploring the Buddha's teaching. That when people read suttas or they listen to talks or go to various teachings, certain things may start to make sense in a way from doing this kind of meditation. And I think it's another important feature that it because you're relying more on yourself, you're staying with your own choices and where you're going in meditation, it does build more inner trust and confidence around your mind, around your inner world. And I think that's of great value for us. Yes?
I had the experience in that last practice of sort of wanting to move. Whereas previously I would actually try and stay open, but still I was sort of playing around with it, going with it, and I wondered whether that fit into this idea of following.
Yes, that's the thing. If something comes up, and say you feel like you're, Alex is saying, you know, that you're moving around or something like that, there's some kind of movement in your body or something like that, to let it go on for a bit, you know, not to try to just clamp down and stop it, but to see, well, what happens if I let it go on? And you can always, gently, slow it down or stop it, but to just kind of take in what it is you're experiencing and not just immediately have a response of, I can't do this. Same thing like with, if you find yourself leaning forward in the sitting, instead of continually trying to straighten up, just let yourself lean forward for a while. Just see what it's like, you know. Hopefully, we're not supposed to be looking at each other and comparing so much. So don't worry about it. So that goes with most of your experience. That and some of that really has to do with allowing things to form in the sitting, instead of feeling like, well, I must be in control of this and manage it, instead to consider, instead of controlling, that you're navigating, you're kind of steering your way through it and finding your way through these different experiences. And especially if they're recurrent experiences, that if, you know, you keep finding that each sitting or for many sittings in a row, you feel your body moving, then to let yourself go with it. Or you feel yourself falling asleep, let yourself go into it. Don't try to change your experience right off, but, you know, at the very beginning, but let it form and then see what kind of adjustments may start to occur. And that reminds me too of, you know, I answered one question earlier about, you know, reflecting back on thoughts. And one thing that I'd like to say also around a procedure of that is let yourself have recurrent thoughts or feelings, you know, let them go on and see what you pick up about them instead of trying to stop them and, you know, reflect back and get to know them too quickly. So this kind of approach is really one that I see develops patience, that you start to be a bit more patient with yourself and your experience. And that you're finding that if you let something go on for a bit longer, you're also starting to trust that you will, become a little bit more aware that something may come out around it. You know, it's not going to happen each time, but you may find that many times, just a little bit longer, you start to notice something about your experience that previously had gone undetected. Yes. Yes.
Thinking just about this an hour ago. And the trouble is, I'm not very interested, because I'm bold, I'm not interested in exploring my bold.
Yes, and we're often not. Yes. So that's why I'm saying basically to say if you're bored, just let yourself be bored and stay with it instead of trying to do anything about it. And that boredom is, how do you say, I mean, it's natural. We should be bored, basically. We're doing something awfully boring here. You know, to consider that, it, you know, there shouldn't be any of it, it's unrealistic. But also, boredom is a broad term. So as I was talking about labels before, is that what may start to make it interesting is to look at, well, what, if I break this down and go into a bit more detail, what's going on that I'm calling boredom? You know, what is happening? Am I sitting here just waiting for the bell to ring? And why is that going on, that I'm sitting here waiting for the bell to ring? Oh, I feel that the sitting is actually done. There's nothing more that's going to happen here. And you may start to, you know, understand some things around your experience of being bored, so that instead of trying to be interested, you may find that you're, by adding detail to the experience, by kind of looking at it more closely, some interest may emerge from that. Yes. Yes.
Which is to remember. And as I understand it from reading your book and listening to you, what you're suggesting is that this practice of recollection, which is actually what the Buddha meant by what's now called mindfulness, and that he was suggesting we recollect or we remember our thoughts, feelings, etc., and that this was the practice that he was recommending. And mindfulness is a modern word, different word that doesn't mean the same thing anymore. That was the first part. The other part was the word meditation, which you do use a lot, also didn't exist originally in the Pali Canon or any of the early teachings. And so, as I've understood it, maybe not so much from you, but other sources, it links more to something like completely accident. So as I understand it, is it the case then that what was suggested by you, by him, and also by you, is to cultivate this practice of recognition? That's what meditation was intended to. What we call meditation was that that's the original intention. Is that what you're saying? And just to reflect on these terms, meditation, cultivation, and the other.
Okay, good. Yes. I often, I see this, I don't know exactly what the Buddha taught. I don't think anybody does. I'd be hard-pressed to say that this is what he taught. There are other teachers who are comfortable saying that, but I really don't know. But from indications yes, the word sati, at least according to certain scholars, was translated or was used to mean four different things. One was what we have used as mindfulness, in the sense of mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of breath, mindfulness of eating, of awareness at the moment, here and now. Another sense was in recollection. In recollecting, and that was actually the more common sense at that time of the word. But another one, which is also applicable to this, was a broad open awareness of things, that it wasn't about a specific focused awareness, say, on the breath or something, which would be more likely to fit in the area of concentration, but a broad awareness around your experience. And I think that's also a very important feature of what the Buddha was teaching. And when you read the Pali text and everything, why is he bringing up all these different aspects of people's experience? Why is he going into such variety? Is that he was cultivating a very broad open awareness of things and wasn't necessarily trying to exclude any part of, the human experience. And so I think that's important feature of developing awareness. And the fourth one is that awareness is connected with discernment and wisdom, that it's not just a kind of, not just that you're noticing things, but that you're actually going to develop from your noticing some ability to go further, to explore, to investigate, to know more, to become wiser around your experience. And what was the second question?
Was about the meditation, that word.
Yeah.
That also
right. Right. That's actually a much longer topic. So I think I'll table that one and we'll move on to another question. Sorry. This thing's precarious. Okay. Yes.
Second one was actually one I was interested in.
Oh, okay.
Not the definition of meditation, but are there any aspects of cultivation in the practice that you're teaching? So to go back to my own experience, that's part of my regular practice anyway, to do cultivating the wholesome factors. And, things like the Brahmaviharas would be an example. I can see that it might actually be counterproductive in the sense that you're working and just being with experience and just see how it goes and gradually changing your relationship. But from experience, it's usually seemed to me that there was also a role for an active cultivation of the wholesome qualities, the wholesome mental factors. And I guess that's what I'm wondering about. Is there, the approach that you're teaching, is there an aspect which is cultivation?
Yes. The difference is, distinguishing feature here is rather than doing a practice where you're trying to generate or create, say, loving kindness, in this approach what you're doing is you're reflecting back and remembering your experiences of being friendly, kind, what those mental states are. And by reflecting back on them, you find that you're actually starting to bring up the value. You're in a sense lifting them out of a place where, you know, there might be something you just pass over to something that now you recognize more clearly. And my sense of it, from my experience, meditation, work with people, is that wholesome qualities are subtler than unwholesome qualities. That unwholesome qualities we will notice in a very coarse, direct way. Like we will notice our anger and our will and lust, you know, quite strongly. But we might not notice our patience, for example, because we may only see it when we're aware that impatience is gone, you know. We might not be aware sometimes of a subtle kind of friendliness or kindness at times. It just kind of goes a bit under the surface. So part of this approach is actually recollecting and noticing those qualities, and then becoming more familiar with them. And I think this ties in with brain research. I think Rick Hansen's speaking next, and we had dialogues around this that, you know, his basic approach would be, you know, that we disregard, you know, positive qualities in a way. We don't really know. So to keep generating them is a good thing. But my approach is that because we disregard them, you know, because we may pass over them and not value them as much, maybe the direction is to remember them more and to become more conscious. And then that becomes something that we recognize quite frequently, and then we can focus on it. So for example, say in your meditation sitting, you know, you start off with an argument with somebody, and you find that as the argument goes on, you remember something about that person that gives you some empathy, some kindness, some kind feelings. And instead of saying, well, that was just a, you know, this random moment of kindness, to really look at the value of that experience of moving from having angry thoughts to a moment of kindness, and to having a different kind of reflection and way of relating to that person than you had prior, and that is what cultivating wholesome qualities is about. Yes. Sure.
I find that 2 minutes is nowhere near enough to remember half an hour's multiple thoughts. So I wasn't trusting myself to remember. So I was doing some kind of noting at the time, but not completely different from the usual noting. It was more detailed, you know, more along the lines of what you were talking about earlier on. I suppose you might put it more analytical.
Yes, well, good. You know, so that's, you know, part of this is that I'm trying to give enough structure, enough of idea of how to do this, but not telling you exactly what to do. So what you start to find is you discover things like this. So you discover your own way in a sitting to become a bit more aware of what's going on. And as long as it's not creating more tension and aggression, it is leading to you getting, picking up a bit more or exploring and becoming more interested in certain experiences, it's a good thing, you know. And so it sounds great.